In lesson 10, we are finishing up some thoughts on chapter 7. And we've worked through the first page on lesson 10, which is page 19. We've already kind of worked our way through that, which just to kind of remember here some things that was going on is we kind of said, you know, Nehemiah is not exactly like the primary character in this lesson, which we've seen him more or less in all the other chapters up to this point. He was kind of the main character. Other people too, of course, but it's been about Nehemiah. And he's still there, obviously. He's the governor, you know, of Jerusalem. But in chapter 7, he appoints some other leaders. His brother, the leader of Jerusalem, to kind of take charge of some things there, because Nehemiah, of course, has a plan that he'll be leaving. He has to go back to serve the king, remember? And he chose his brother because of his character. Because, as the text would say, because he was a man of integrity and feared God more than most men do. And we discussed the fact that sure says a lot about him. It says everything about him, really, when you consider that. And so we looked at, on through the chapter, verse 5, where it says, "So God put it in my heart to assemble the nobles, the officials, and the common people for the registration of families." There was this calling together then of all of the people. And the list that goes on through chapter 7, we noted, was the same list as found in Ezra chapter 2, those who had come to the city some years before. But here everybody's been called back, has been called in. There's a purpose in mind of establishing some things there in the city that need to be put in place. And so there were some people in positions of authority, we see, as far as leaders of the city and the officers and the nobles, and even among those Jews who had come into the city sometime before, there was positions of authority and responsibility that had been given by God, we would emphasize. And so there is some elevation in rank, even, we discussed as we see that. And we spent a few minutes talking about Ezra, because Ezra comes back into this story. And we noted how Ezra had prepared himself even for this time of being a leader among God's people and being able to present God's word to those who were gathered there. And we spent a little bit of time talking about the reading of the law as it takes place in Nehemiah chapter 8, which we started discussing that. And so that's some of the things we looked at Wednesday night, bringing us to this point. We look at page 20, which is the back side of lesson 10. And we're starting here just trying to make some application of some of the lessons that have been learned, where we are trying to see and emphasize the point that leaders must organize and delegate. We see that's what Nehemiah did. We see, and we've seen that he's done that already, even in the rebuilding of the wall, when he called certain ones to certain tasks, and that there were leaders among the people that were called to help to further organize and get the work done. So it's not something new that now he's calling people together to organize and delegate. But here again, in a very large-scale way, you know, those who have been called in even from outside of the city, the Jews, you know, there's a great number. As we read in Nehemiah chapter 8 on Wednesday night when Ezra got up to, you know, read the law, I really don't know how many were there. It doesn't really say. Now we know it was close to 50,000 that came back to the city, you know, in the years prior. I mean, how many of those would have been there? But we get the impression that the square was full near the water gate where the platform had been built for Ezra to stand on and to read. And so there's a lot of people there. And it would have taken organization to organize that. Nehemiah was willing to let others lead is one of our first points here. And I think this is kind of an interesting point and even a critical point in so many ways. Nehemiah recognized strengths in others and appointed them to roles of leadership. On one hand, we think, well, yeah, of course. I mean, that's what leaders would do. But listen, on the other side of it, sometimes I've seen some leaders that were apprehensive about doing that. You know, he delegated responsibility and authority. And he did so wisely, seeking spiritual people to be in those leadership roles. That was something that really stood out as we went through the reading in chapter 7 and in chapter 8. And the point I thought we could make with this is, You know, it does take a certain amount of self-confidence, and I'm calling it healthy self-confidence, to turn loose. I mean, Nehemiah has been in charge of this project now, you know, for some time. He's been the one who came and organized and kind of encouraged the people to the work that needed to be done and helped them understand and taught them that God's hand is with us. This is the will of God. This is what he wants done. And so he's been the man in charge of this all the way through. And now we've come to a point where, as we went through chapter 7 and chapter 8, remember, we said, where's Nehemiah? Because there's not so much said about Nehemiah, though we noted that, of course, he was there. He was just the one that had organized. Now he has stepped back. As Ezra is the one who's come forward and is doing the reading, there's been an appointment of one to be in charge of the city. And so it does take, I want you to think about this, and I want your comments. It takes a certain amount of healthy self-confidence to turn loose of authority that you might have, or position or power that you might have, and to put others in place and let them be in front and let them lead. You know what I mean when I say it takes some self-confidence to be able to turn loose? I mean, sometimes, you know, the argument's made on the other side, and sometimes you have to teach people about the need of having self-confidence so they can take hold of what they need to do. It takes self-confidence as well to say, I don't have to do that because here's someone else who can do it. Or maybe even here's someone else, they can do that better than I can, and they need to be doing that. Could Nehemiah have stood up and read the law before the people? I imagine he could. I imagine he was educated well enough to have read the law. Why was Ezra a better choice?
He was a scribe.
He was prepared. You know, looking at Ezra chapter 7, he had prepared himself even for that day. He was the right person to have done that. Nehemiah might have been able to get the job done, so to speak. But Nehemiah was the man for the day. I mean, Ezra was the man for the day for the reading. All right, so thanks. Some more comments. You know, the healthy self-confidence that is needed to turn loose. On one hand, that sounds just peculiar to say. Absolutely, that's a good point.
That's our perspective.
That's right.
We must decrease and he must increase.
That's a good point. Good analogy right there, Gene and Vince.
I've worked in industry a lot and seen different management styles.
Yeah.
And the managers that are afraid of someone subordinate to them showing them up mm-hmm. tend to squelch the people under them.
That's right.
And so they can't. On the other hand, my philosophy was I want the best people in the world working for me,
mm-hmm.
and if they surpassed me, fine. And that happened to me in one company. An analyst that I brought into the company ended up being a senior vice president of the company. Mm-hmm. I was still at the same level.
Right.
It didn't matter.
Right.
The job was getting done.
Exactly. Exactly right. I think that's a key point. And I've seen the same thing in industry, you know, and in other applications too, where you have a manager who's afraid for somebody to do too good because it might make them look bad. You know, in the big picture, that just doesn't work. And just think if Nehemiah had that attitude, how the story could have had a different turn to it. Absolutely. See, the story is not really about Nehemiah. I mean, Nehemiah is the pen here that is telling God's story. But it's about God's will. It's about what does God want. You know, Nehemiah is just that one who's putting it out there for us. It's not really about Nehemiah. Well, it can be a scary thing, going back to a business or a secular type of activity. If you are the one responsible, you know, for something that's being done, if you're a leader, a manager, and it doesn't get done because a subordinate didn't get the job done, who's going to be responsible? The subordinate, you may have something to say to the subordinate, but you are the one responsible. And so, yeah, it can be very hard to kind of turn something loose to someone else if you're the one that's still going to be responsible for it. Was Nehemiah still responsible for the activities taking place? Absolutely he was. He was there. As we get into chapter 8, we still find that Nehemiah is still there. He's still in charge of what's going on. It's just he was putting others in places of responsibility to get it done. All right. So where is this leading? How can we make application in the church? What do we see?
Well, one thing that I'm thinking about here is it's kind of a little bit of a parallel to this. Was when Jethro counseled Moses, he said, "You can't do all this." Moses was trying to judge mm-hmm. the whole
Good
nation
point.
Of Israel. Jethro said, "You're wearing yourself out. You can't do this. You need to get some help. You need to appoint some men, some godly men, to help you in judging the people."
Yes. Absolutely.
He was wise to appoint, to delegate to others things that others could do.
Well, let's think of some scenarios or situations in the Lord's church, how we might make application to some of this. How does it become real in this way?
I believe, you know, like this congregation, we don't have elders, but we do have several men that are willing to step up, teach classes, preach a lesson, and take care of also some physical needs, too. But I believe that's how God established the church. Mm-hmm. That, you know, we, Timothy, you know, Paul tells Timothy and Titus, appoint men that can carry out these duties. Because in doing so, there is a working together, there's an attitude of mm-hmm. working together. And mm-hmm. with that attitude, we want to please God. We
sure.
want to, you know, honor God. So that's why we appoint elders, and that, but they have to be tried, they have to be proven to be spiritually mature and all. But I believe in, like, you know, the Lord's church today, yes, there's that, like an evangelist that may lead or guide in some way, but really it's the men of the congregation are to take that role and to advance the spiritual growth of a congregation.
You know, a couple of scenarios let me offer here just for some discussion for us to think about. And I've seen this happen. I've seen cases where, while every church needs elders, God said so. That has to be the goal of every church, to work to a point where their men can be appointed as spiritual shepherds. But that doesn't mean that the elders are to do the work of the church. Someone asked the question one time. I thought this was insightful. I read about this. And the question was asked to a group of students, something to the effect, I won't say it's exactly right, what is the responsibility of the elders? And someone said, to do the work of the church. And the teacher said, no. And that was kind of a surprise. What do you mean the elders aren't to do the work of the church? No, they're not.
They're overseers.
The church is to do the work of the church. And the elders are to oversee the work, to encourage and to edify, to build up the church. We've read Ephesians 4, verses 11 and 12 a lot of times in this class, I realize. It's intentional. You know, that there are evangelists, pastors, and teachers to equip the saints so that the saints may be able to do the work of ministry and edification. And I've seen the scenario work in such a way where the elders have full responsibility, and they do have responsibility of what's happening with the church, but nobody else knows what's going on, and seemingly hardly anybody else is involved because the elders are doing everything. And that's not what Nehemiah is doing. And I'm not trying to say this is a direct parallel what Nehemiah's day to the church, but we can make some examples here. You know, preachers. Let me step on preachers' toes for a minute, my own. It is so easy for preachers to just grab a hold of everything and want to be in charge of everything, so to speak. I've seen cases where a preacher would think if he's not in the pulpit, something is just not going right. You know, that he has to preach every time there's a worship service, and he has to teach every class. And I appeal back to Ephesians chapter 4, verses 11 and 12 again. You know, if a preacher does all the preaching and all the teaching, how is he equipping the church? How is he equipping other men, other teachers, to be able to do that work? And I'm going to tell you something. This is what happens in most churches. One of the things that has just thrilled me here has been the willingness of other men to teach classes and to take turn preaching. Like what we've done this last year on Sunday nights, I'm just going to tell you, I think it's the best thing in the world we ever could have done is for different men to be teaching the class every Sunday night. The growth that we have seen from that has been amazing. But I've seen situations where, I honestly believe a preacher in that same situation would have very well been looking for a place to go where he could do preaching because he wasn't able to preach all the time. I've seen that scenario. And I think we've totally missed, preachers sometimes totally miss their responsibility in trying to help teach and bring others up to the point of being able to teach and do the work of ministry or service and edify. And so that was one of the things that just came to my mind as I'm reading through here and looking at Nehemiah and his willingness to let go. That's the whole discussion here about this, you know, this healthy self-confidence that it takes for Nehemiah to say, okay, I don't have to run the city. I'm going to get my brother to do that. He's a spiritual man. He's a good man. He can do this. And I don't have to be the one that, you know, reads the law. It's got to be done. It needs to be done. You know, Ezra's the one that needs to do that. And that just kind of stands out to me, you know, Ken and Dave.
One of the ways it appears to be that this local church is some men here that are pretty good song leaders, and every one of them wanted Tim Stevens to come here.
Yeah.
If we might be even better.
That's right.
At singing.
That's right. That's right. Good example.
For all of us that have children, there's a part of us that, when they're little, we want them to stay cute and cuddly and nurture them and everything, but we got to see the big picture that they got to grow up and become mature.
Yeah, that someday there comes a point where they have to move on and be on their own, and we need to prepare them for that. Going back to the role of an elder again, is to help bring about that kind of spiritual maturity. You know, it as part of it. Some standing guard.
Another guy standing guard.
Yeah.
And I think the lesson in that is that as a church, everybody needs to have a job. Mm-hmm. Everybody needs to. That's where the responsibility of the leaders come in to recognize who has what talent.
That's right. And to use them.
And let use them to do that. You know, I'm not good at all the computer stuff. We've got people.
That's right. Involved. That's
not
right.
Just sitting on the sideline.
That's exactly right. Brent.
The Hebrew word for faithful is the Hebrew word that means reliable.
his back is to the congregation, and his face is as Jesus was trying to get to Jerusalem, to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
But between him and heaven, he holds the Bible. That's the picture I try to see in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
He has the Bible out in front of him, and he's following the scriptures to lead him to the kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And the group follows behind.
That's
him.
Right.
This word being the instruction,
mm-hmm.
not what he thinks should be.
That's right. That's exactly right. Good point. Bless you.
I was going to go back to the point you were making about what we did this past year with so many of the men being seen in front of the congregation speaking. Kind of changes the dynamics of a congregation when not just one man,
mm-hmm.
the preacher
yeah.
is being seen in the pulpit all the time, or being
mm-hmm.
seen leading the congregation in Bible studies such as that. So I think that I agree with what you said, is that it creates a paradigm shift when, like, others here who are maybe regular, but they're learning what this is about, that are somewhat visitors, perhaps, or we have visitors in, and they see numerous men. See, I grew up, where I grew up, it was just the certain people in long robes and special outfits
mm-hmm.
that got up and did
mm-hmm.
something up front. And you weren't included in that. That was an exclusive club, the people who wore the robes and the stoles. And that's even more true in Catholic and Anglican, Episcopal,
mm-hmm.
these derivatives, you know, of the kind of hierarchy of the Catholic Church. And in that situation, it would be easy for individuals to get the impression that I cannot do what those people are doing up there. I cannot teach a class. This is the impression that I have. I can't ever do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not qualified for what they're doing.
And in some cases, that's exactly what they've been told, that they can't do that.
The point is that when our children, the little children that are growing up in this congregation, are not going to be like I was, that only saw one man up there preaching
mm-hmm.
and doing things
right.
that were worship to God, but they're seeing Daryl's children,
mm-hmm.
Emily's, Jamie's, and these children that are growing up in this congregation, because of what we've been striving to do, which is expand the teachers
mm-hmm.
and the men and the leaders.
That's right.
And anybody that is going to be an elder has to develop to be an elder, and they have to begin to do the work of an elder before they're an elder.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not some great change when they become an elder.
Because
it's
they're already doing much of that.
Doing
exactly
the work
right.
Of being an elder.
Exactly right. And like with Ezra, I mean, he was already doing this. He's called on to read, you know, the word of the law, the word of God. It's not like he hasn't been doing that already. I mean, he's been doing, he's prepared himself to do those things, you know. And so we see that. This is what just stands out to me in these chapters 7 and 8, is the calling on these others to be in positions of leadership who've already proven themselves, you know, in these ways. I think it's just some powerful lessons. And, too, I brought this on our outline here. You know, there seems to be a biblical pattern here of helping others to excel, helping others to grow into leadership roles. I mean, we could think of more examples than just a few. It was Joshua who followed in the steps of Moses. When Moses was no more, it was not a surprise that Joshua was the one to be called on to be the leader of the children of Israel. He'd walked in the footsteps of Moses. You know, he had received counsel and mentoring from Moses. He was prepared, you know, to take the leadership role. Elisha was trained by Elijah, you know, the prophets. I mean, we see that pattern there. Jesus spent 3.5 years mentoring and teaching the apostles. You know, look at the time that he spent with them, so that when he was gone, when he was ascended to heaven, they would be ready. They'd be prepared for that. You know, Paul mentored many, but Vince or someone you mentioned this morning, Timothy and Titus certainly stand out as evangelists that Paul had taught or trained. And so, I mean, there's just examples such as that go on. And so we can see the power of preparing others for leadership, so to speak. And then it's faith that builds because of a willingness to be involved in that way. This church is so blessed with a number of teachers, men and women, you know, that have learned to be good teachers in classes and auditoriums such as this, men who can present good lessons, you know. But I think everyone who has been in such a position as that of making a talk or preaching, teaching a class would have to say, or would say something like, "Man, you should have heard the first time I preached," or maybe not, you know. I mean, that first 10-minute sermon that I preached, I mean, you would love for another 10-minute sermon, I know, but you probably, you don't want to hear that one.
That was long compared to my first sermon.
Was it less than 10 minutes?
It was less than 10 minutes.
And so it just takes time of development, but as Rick is saying, there has to be that willingness to start. Emily.
When you bring up Joshua, it makes me think that the people were so resistant against Moses. But it says that the entire time Joshua was leading, that the people never returned from God.
That's right.
And I don't think that has to do so much with their leading styles, and maybe the same thing with Nehemiah. It has more to do with the people's response to them, and that they were ready then to excel. So it's not just about maybe being a good leader, because they were both good leaders. Mm-hmm. It's about when the people are ready to excel.
Sure.
And all elders are leaders, but not all leaders are elders. But there's
good point.
There's a time at which people need to be ready not just to be good leaders, but to take it to the next step.
Sure.
And make sure that everything is falling in line. And that's kind of what the people were ready about by the time Joshua was mentioned.
And I suppose there could be some points made that when there are those who are ready and able to lead, like with the children of Israel, a willingness to follow. They didn't always have that mind, we see. You know, even with Moses, you know. But there has to be that willingness to follow as well. And the same thing here. Now, there was a willingness to follow Nehemiah as we get in more into the story. And like I said, the next few chapters are going to go kind of quickly. But when we come back into the story, chapter 12, 13, there's a need of Nehemiah coming back, right? Because Nehemiah needed to do some more leading there. They listened to Nehemiah. They didn't always listen to some others. Getting ahead of ourselves. Let's look on a little bit. So, Nehemiah was willing to let others lead. We've discussed well. I just want to make a couple of other kind of shorter points, perhaps. What time is it here? Five after 5. Okay. All right. Well, I missed that clock. You think I don't look at that clock? I know. I actually do look at that clock. Nehemiah organized the community. At first, when I was reading through, and I got this was finally something that kind of stood out to me a little bit, and I kind of thought there's got to be some points on this. And the more I thought, I kind of think there are several points that need to be made. Nehemiah organized the community. And what I mean by that is you go through, you know, chapter 7, it was when, you know, Nehemiah, who started setting up some things, or to be a leader in the city, for there to be somebody in charge of the citadel, for there to be the calling together of the assembly of the nobles and the officials and the common people, you know, that's Nehemiah who is organizing all of that. He's already demonstrated organizational ability in the rebuilding of the wall. I mean, that took a tremendous amount of organizational ability to get that done. So he has proven skills in that way. And I got thinking, there's got to be something said here about the need of a leader having some ability of organizing, which it would seem to me would mean first that he must be somewhat organized himself. How can you organize others if you have no organizational ability yourself? Neil.
I think his title is the, what was it, wine taster?
Say it again.
Was he the wine taster for the king?
He was, yeah, the cupbearer.
Cupbearer.
So, yeah, he would taste the wine and the food.
He wasn't assigned that as the bottom end. He was at the top and he organized down below.
Absolutely.
Who prepared, he analyzed and then decided who was going to prepare what he was
That's
going
right.
to do. Where it came from, and because his life depended upon it, he wasn't the sacrificial goat. He was the organizer to prove how good his organization was. He put his life on the line.
Isn't it interesting that God would choose Nehemiah to be the one to go to Jerusalem and organize things? Don't you suppose there's a purpose and there's a reason in that? That he already had such skills to be able to do that. He's already demonstrated those skills. Maybe an example here, Acts chapter 6. Remember the introduction here to Acts chapter 6. There was some needs in the church in Jerusalem. There were some needs that weren't being met. There were some of the widows who were not being attended to. And so the apostles, the 12, called the multitude of the disciples, the church, together and said in Acts 2, verse 6, "It's not desirable that we should leave the word of God and serve tables. Therefore, brethren, seek out among you seven men of good reputation, full of the Holy Spirit and wisdom, whom we may appoint over this business." This is just one example that kind of came to my mind as far as the church application goes, that there was a particular need that had to be addressed. And the instructions of the apostles here give some inclination here of who they need to look for. Well, it's already men of reputation. It's men who the church would have confidence in that, hey, these are the guys that can get it done. You know, these guys had they had good reputation. They're full of the Holy Spirit. They had wisdom about them. And so they were the ones asked and appointed to go about doing that work. Now, application to the church. I'm looking for your thoughts. Applications to the church today. What would we say with regard to the need of organization, Brent?
I like the phrase that's used in Nehemiah 7:3, where he said to the people before the gates, the ends of that, each one of the people before his gate, he will also be watched for his own home or own house.
Mm-hmm.
There's a commercial, a very sober commercial that's being played right now of the parents.
Sure. And good leaders have demonstrated that. What else?
These men that were appointed here probably the first deacons that were appointed. And they were men who were known. And so the application, your question was that how that apply to the church today. We should know each other well enough to know who is and who isn't qualified.
Mm-hmm. and the church should know. Yeah, I think that's true. Is it a fair statement to say that if a man's personal life itself is just so unorganized that he can't seem to get things done and accomplish things, that he's going to have little success organizing anything with regard to the church? You know, as I got reading through and thinking about this more and more, I kind of thought, you know, if a man cannot organize his own life, how is he going to have any success trying to organize or help mentor the lives of someone else? You know, just something
to
think
about. Kind of pointing the qualifications of the elder, really, if you think about it.
Yeah.
If he can't manage his own house,
yeah,
he doesn't have a good reputation without,
yeah,
all of these things, then he,
that's right,
he does not fit that
model. Exactly. I hadn't even pulled that in. Exactly right. Good thoughts. You know, maybe what we need to do, you know, our time's almost gone. We'll save that. Go ahead, Danny. You want to comment?
I was just saying, in the business world, one of the things that I have to get with young businessmen is that you need a beginning strategy, and you need to get everything worked out, how you're going to make this business grow and how big and what you want it to do. But you also have to start at the beginning with an exit strategy. What are you going to do when you grow up?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I see in church is that if I get a small congregation and it's got a very powerful preacher there who runs everything, they never grow.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not training people around them. They're taking on all the responsibility. Now, as they get older, there's no way for them to get out.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's nobody coming up to fill their shoes.
Sometimes churches become,
we have
churches
to make sure that you're going to have good people around you that are going to take over if you have business to continue, even after you.
Absolutely.
And that we want the church to continue even after that. I have my faith. I have to be able to step aside and let people feel that responsibility. And whether it's business or church, you've got to continue to grow,
mm-hmm,
good people around you, or you fail.
Yeah, churches can become very dependent on preachers sometimes, as opposed to being dependent on the Lord.
That's right.
And so a preacher has to be able to point to the Lord. Here's where our dependency must be, is on the Lord. It's not on the preacher. Right. Good discussion. Good points today. Lord willing, Wednesday night, we're taking up there in the middle of the part, Nehemiah organized the community, about in the middle right there. And we're going to work our way through that. And then make sure you've got lesson 11 back here. Pick up lesson 11. And that's where we're going Wednesday night. Thank you for your comments.